This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Afghanistan War, 20 years of conflict, the longest war in United States history. Those are the kinds of phrases that journalists like me offer up in an inadequate attempt to encapsulate and make sense of a conflict, a war, a catastrophe. What do we call it? A pivotal moment in our history that cost trillions of dollars, took thousands of lives, and irrevocably shaped millions more lives and transformed two countries. How do we make sense of all that? Well, for the rest of this week, we're going to try something a little bit different. We'll put the policy decisions and political debates aside for a moment and just listen. We'll hear from Afghan women, from U.S. veterans, and from others about how choices made in Washington and Kabul shaped their own lives, for some, from childhood in 2001 to adulthood in 2021. Now, we don't claim that these individuals are wholly representative of any one group. No one is. But perhaps we might better understand the consequences of national and international hubris, bellicosity, even idealism, by listening to some of the people who lived through the consequences of those historic forces. So today, we're joined by Shabana Bazizrasikh. She's 31 years old. She was born and raised in Kabul, and is the co-founder of the School of Leadership Afghanistan, known as SOLA, the first and only private boarding school for girls in the country. And she joins us now from Rwanda. Shabana, welcome to On Point.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us about why you're in Rwanda right now?
Meghna, we made plans following the announcement by the U.S. government of unconditional withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan to make sure that the continuity of learning for our students who come from 28 of the 34 provinces to our campus will never be compromised. And we were seriously concerned that as the first and only boarding school for girls in the country, doing business as usual would increasingly become irresponsible. So we looked at various contingency plans, one of which was to send our students home, providing them computers and or smartphones and equipping them with internet access so that they could continue with their education from the safety of their homes, but virtually. And we saw a dangerous trend as we were making those plans. We realized that the Taliban were increasingly attacking power gridline and telecommunication infrastructure across Afghanistan. And what quickly then became a nightmare for us was to send our girls home, even with all these equipments and a potential ability to get online. But then because they wouldn't have access to electricity, that they won't be able to charge these laptops or smartphones. And unfortunately, we would lose contact with them and will have no way of being able to bring them back to school. So the next best option, among other options that we considered, was to look at a study abroad program. Mm. And this is how we have ended up in Rwanda. The initial plan was to look at countries in the region, ideally countries that are familiar to Afghans and our students' families. And then, as you know, in the recent months, thousands and thousands of Afghans started leaving the country to these neighboring countries. And it became very difficult to be able to create space for Sola in one of these neighboring countries for a study abroad program. A long story short, we were able to, through a mutual friend of our school, connect with President Kagame, who extended the offer to host our study abroad program here in Rwanda. And that's how we ended up here.
So that means that the girls' families are still in Afghanistan, right?
Yes.
I also want to make it clear to listeners right now that, Shabana, I also understand that because of that, it's still an extremely sensitive situation for you, the girls, even though you're in Rwanda, because of family members still being in Afghanistan. So there may be questions that I ask that you can't answer, and I completely understand that.
That's correct.
But will
you? Thank you, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, that is part of the story, that the last U.S. soldier may no longer be in Afghanistan, but the war, quote unquote, is not over. But can you tell me about what you had to, some of the difficult decisions that you had to make in order to leave Afghanistan and take the school to Rwanda? I mean, there was so much that that you were doing for the girls beyond just the academic education. I understand that you had to burn the, you felt you needed to burn the records of the school?
Yeah, so initially we were planning on doing a study abroad program and doing this quite discreetly without the intention of adding to the anxiety and fear that people in Afghanistan felt. Every time the U.S. government or any European country made public announcements urging citizens of their countries to leave Afghanistan, it had an incredibly psychologically damaging impact on people in Afghanistan, especially those who never had an option to leave the country. So I was very conscious of that, and it made sense to me to make sure that our study abroad program was going to happen in a very discreet manner, that I didn't want people looking at our temporary study abroad program as the first and only boarding school for girls in the country, which is a great hope for many girls across Afghanistan, also packing up and leaving. And so in this study abroad program, we had planned to bring with us a lot of these students' records. But unfortunately, you know, to our shock and obviously to great shock of many people in Afghanistan and outside of Afghanistan, our study abroad program very quickly turned into an evacuation out of Afghanistan. And at the very last minute, we had to make some very difficult decisions, and one of which was burning physical records on campus of our students, but especially of nearly 300 plus girls this year alone who applied to SOLA. And especially I wanted to make sure that those families who weren't successful in admitting their daughters to my school, that their information, their personal address, their phone numbers, their full names, their family members' names were all protected. And so we very quickly burned as many records as we could. And then on the day Taliban took over the city, we still had quite a lot of documents that we hadn't burned. And we realized that burning them would actually draw attention to our school and our location. So we came up with a plan B, which was to throw all these papers in a large container and throw acid on them to destroy any evidence of students and their names or their families' names and phone numbers.
What was that like when you had to do that?
Very painful. A year and a half ago, I had a father of one of my current students who came to Sola from a remote province that I won't name, urging me to admit his younger daughter to Sola. And as he was leaving my office, he said, and this was early January 2020, literally not even 2 months before the U.S. signed an agreement with the Taliban. As he stood up, he turned around and said, and by the way, when the Taliban come to Kabul, promise me that you will burn any and all records indicating that my daughter was ever a student in your school. And it's a conversation I haven't forgotten. I will never forget. Here I had a father who came to my office urging me to admit another one of his daughters. But as he was leaving, he made a comment that really brought this issue front and center to me, mm-hmm. the safety of my students and their families.
Well, this hour we're listening to Shabana Bazij Rasikh. She is the founder of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan, the first and only private boarding school for girls in Afghanistan. As you heard, the school is now relocated, at least for some time, to Rwanda. We'll hear a lot more of Shabana's story when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today is the first day of our series that we are having for the rest of this week that we're calling The Longest War, where we're putting the politics and policy debates aside for at least a little while and just listening to individuals about what the impact of the past 20 years of America's military involvement in Afghanistan, what that impact has been on their individual lives. And today, I'm joined by Shabana Bazij Rasikh. She's with us from Rwanda today. She's founder of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan, which is the first and only private boarding school for girls in Afghanistan. They have had to relocate to Rwanda, as she told us. She's born and raised in Kabul. And Shabana, you were born in 1990, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so just 31 now. That means you were, what, 11 years old, maybe going on 12 during the at the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. So what are your memories of that year, that 2001-2002 period?
Well, I don't remember the beginning of the Taliban era. I don't have memories of that time, at least the early days. But I do remember the day Taliban were defeated. It was a very different morning in my household. My father, who for the longest time was always glued to this very small gray radio that he had listening to BBC World Service and other news outlets every morning with a very sad face. That morning, he was extremely happy. And I kept asking my older sisters what was going on. And one of my sisters said the Taliban are no longer in charge. For some reason, I ran to the door. I opened the door, put my head out, making sure I was still inside in case they saw the happiness on my face and would get me in trouble. And it was a very quiet morning. It was a foggy morning, and that's a memory that I have. And very quickly after that, I remember hearing stories of people bringing out from the hideout spots their music. At that time, they had cassette players. People bringing out their TVs, and young men shaving their beard in celebration, people playing music loudly in the streets and dancing. And then I remember a few months later, the interim government making an announcement that girls could go to the nearest public school for a placement test. Because the Taliban had burned records for all female students, and this is a pre-digital era, so the interim government had no way of identifying any grade level for students, for girls, and especially with nearly 6 years of interruption. So we poured into nearest public schools in thousands, and participated in the placement test. And I remember the day that results were announced, my particular school decided to put us in clusters of 60 or 70 students, and girls who performed really well were chosen as class representatives, and they were being introduced to their cluster. And I was one of those girls. When my teacher called my name to come to the front of the line to be introduced to my classmates, as I walked to her, as I walked up to her, she looked at me and she said, are you Shabana? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, no. It was a reaction I did not expect. But as soon as I stood next to her facing my classmates, I felt the same way. I realized for the first time, I had just turned 12, that I was going to be in a classroom about to start my seventh grade with girls who were at least 6 years older than I was. And these were girls who were returning to school where they had left off. And thanks to the decision my parents made under the Taliban regime to educate me and my sisters in secret schools, I was suddenly ahead of my peers by 6 years. And I remember for the first time realizing what my parents had truly done. I remember under the Taliban regime often wondering if my parents ever loved me, because they risked our lives every day just for an education. And I sometimes wondered what kind of parents would do that. Sometimes coming home with my sisters, begging them not to send us to that secret school. And they would always remind us that in life, everything can be taken away from us. But if there's one thing that no one can take away from us, that is our education, our ability to think for ourselves, to be independent human beings. And that day, I felt so incredibly lucky, but also so ashamed that I had given my parents such a hard time. And I realized at such a young age the power, the unbelievable power of education, especially for young women.
12 years old. 12 years old. Tell me more about these secret schools. What were they? Where were they?
They were, I attended at least four different ones. Three of them were near my neighborhood, ran by teachers, women who were, prior to the Taliban regime, teachers in schools. And in some of them, basically the scene was that this was a school where we were learning how to read the Quran. But in secret, we were also reading or studying other books, regular school subjects, math and science and history and literature. And granted, we were young, but this one particular school that I later attended for a few years with my older sister was a bit far away from my house. And again, was operated by this brave woman who was a high school principal prior to the Taliban regime. She had three daughters, two of whom were students at Kabul Medical University and suddenly could no longer continue their education. And the younger daughter had just finished high school and she too couldn't continue with her higher education. So these three sisters were our teachers. And they had two sons, and the two brothers were basically neighborhood watch, making sure that their neighbors continued to be on board and supportive and that no one was planning on reporting them to the Taliban. And if they ever felt suspicious that there was a Taliban operation trying to look for or discover secret schools, we would suddenly be off for a week or 10 days. And it wasn't like there was a system where they could give us a call or inform our parents to send us back. We would go back on our own. And I remember a few times I showed up to their house, and when they opened the door, I expected that they would let me in. They knew who I was. And I remember them pretending they didn't know who I was and would say, "You have the wrong house." And that was our message, that the school was still off. We never went to the school at the same time. We never came back at the same time. We could never establish a routine because routine was always associated with schooling. We always had a grocery shopping bag where we kept our books. And we always had a little bit of money in case we felt we were being followed. We would then go to the market, purchase some vegetables, and go back home. We were told by the woman who ran that secret school, every single day we were reminded, when you leave my house, remember, walk away as fast as you can. Do not come back here. If you get stopped by the Taliban, take them home. Less people will be killed there. More people will be killed at the school. This was our daily message from our school principal. And we all understood that.
Shabana, I'm only pausing because I can't actually imagine what it's like for a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old person, young person, to have to absorb that message and live it every single day. So it, just that fact
me
alone.
Me too, but...
But you did.
But in the recent years, I would find myself in moments of sharing the story with people, I had grown distant enough from it to be kind of amazed by it as well. And it has come back so full circle, mm-hmm. and has become a great pain thinking that this could be the experience of a whole new generation of young girls.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so that fact alone means that the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and the fall of the Taliban in late 2002 really did bring about a glorious transformation, if I can put it that way, because, as you told us, you no longer had to go to that secret school. There were schools set up for girls in the country. And then, if I have this correctly, after a time you went to high school, or at least finished high school in the United States, and then went on to Middlebury College. Is that right?
That's correct. But before I say that, there are a couple of things I want to set straight, just for the record.
Sure.
One, our relocation to the wonderful nation of Rwanda. We in our school community still consider this a study abroad program.
Okay.
And we have every intention of returning to Afghanistan. We don't know when that is going to be, but that is our intention. The second thing I will point out, and I know that I don't speak, I can comfortably say that I'm not just speaking for myself, that in Afghanistan, the people have never looked at the past 20 years of U.S.-Afghan relations as the invasion of Afghanistan by the U.S. If that were the case, I don't think, I don't believe this relationship would have lasted 20 years. People in Afghanistan have never liked living under the Taliban regime. There has been historically a deep rejection of that ideology by the majority of people. So in 2001, people in Afghanistan welcomed the United States to Afghanistan and believed that we partner with the United States to fight terrorism in our homeland. And then later on, a great group of people felt that we were partners with the United States in rebuilding our country.
And you were part of that. I mean, so when you were at Middlebury College, it was at that time that you decided to found SOLA. Is that right?
Absolutely. Prior to Middlebury, when I first came to the U.S. As a high school exchange student, I was 15. And it was the very first time in my life where I experienced what it was like to live in a society where girls didn't have this fear of losing their opportunity to study, where they never, ever thought about the possibility of a threat to their access to education. Early on, when I even asked a few of them, they were very puzzled as to what I was even trying to ask them. And I found that so beautiful. A lot of educators and parents don't like it when their children or their students take their education for granted. But I knew even then, as a young Afghan girl, that when Afghanistan gets to a place where young girls in Afghanistan have no memory whatsoever of a possible threat to their education or to their access to education, that is the day Afghanistan has achieved the kind of progress and development that can never be reversed. And even then, I wanted that. I wanted that kind of an experience for young Afghan girls. And I have ever since been fighting for that. So when I came to Middlebury College, when I started that experience, my undergraduate studies in Vermont in 2007, I was 17. And I was quite overwhelmed by where I found myself. I felt extremely privileged. after having, you know, learned about what even education in a place like Middlebury meant for American students, I was really overwhelmed. And then on top of it, the UN published a report that said only 6% of women have access to or have a college degree. And that was the last thing for me. I knew I had to do something.
Well, we'll hear a little bit more, or a lot more, about what you did when we come back. This is On Point.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Smart journalism, fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, and for the rest of this week, we've got a special series. We're calling it The Longest War, where we're putting aside for a moment the political and policy debates about 20 years of the U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan. And we're just listening to people on what those 20 years did to them, the impact and how it shaped their lives, many of whom were children in 2001 and grew into adulthood over two decades through now in 2021. Tomorrow, in part two of the series, we'll be hearing from U.S. veterans, again, some of whom saw their parents get deployed to Afghanistan and then deployed themselves. So if you served in the U.S. military in Afghanistan, we want to hear from you. What do you still carry within you from that deployment? We're calling it the longest war, but is it a forever war within you? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for tomorrow. Today, we're listening to the story of Shabana Bazij-Rasikh. She's the founder of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan, the first and only private boarding school for girls in Afghanistan. She's in Rwanda now for obvious reasons. She was born in 1990. She's 31 years old now, so the majority of her life has been lived through this period in human history. Shabana, I wanted to ask you about the fact that a lot of the stories about girls and education in Afghanistan following 2001 really focused on the cities in Afghanistan. But 70% of the country's population lives in rural parts of the country. And so can you talk to me about the girls who came to SOLA from those rural places and what impact their education had, not only on their lives, but on their villages and their families and their community members' lives?
Absolutely. And this is precisely why we turned SOLA into a boarding school in Afghanistan, with this idea that it will be a safe and nurturing environment located in Kabul City, where we will have access to qualified teachers, but the girls will come to us from provinces. For the listeners who are not necessarily quite familiar with Afghanistan and its geography, for a small school of our size, nearly 100 girls, representing 28 of the 34 provinces, is a significant achievement. It is remarkable. SOLA has been home for girls from every corner of the country. It has essentially been a mini Afghanistan. Between our students, there are 12 languages and dialects of Afghanistan spoken or represented. And the girls, above all, have truly, truly embraced each other, in a way showing others the power of unity and what Afghanistan is always has always been about. We have started the SOLA experience at sixth grade, which is when girls are roughly 10 to 12 years old, for a few reasons. Initially, when we thought of SOLA as a four-year high school, we realized very quickly that girls coming to us from provinces in ninth grade, it would already be too late. In a lot of these provinces, schools lack resources, but most especially lack teachers. So a lot of these girls would go to school often without having any teachers or access to teachers. And at the end of their academic year, their school principal would give them an arbitrary mark on their transcript and move them up to the next grade. And so when we started initially working with girls at high school level, they were academically performing at elementary school level. And we couldn't proudly say that SOLA is a school for girls from all over the country, knowing that the reality in provinces. And that is when we started that experience in sixth grade level. At this age, girls are in Afghanistan still seen as young girls and not women, so it was much easier to convince their families to allow them to board. Developmentally, it's an exciting time to work with young girls. And practically, it allowed us time and space to address academic gap or gaps that a lot of these students would have, whether that was in literature or, math or sciences, before they reached high school with us. And we were very purposeful in making this a very gradual growth. We admitted our very first cohort of sixth grade students in 2016. Hmm. Those girls are currently at 11th grade, and they are scheduled to graduate SOLA High School in 2022. They will be our very first graduating class. And ever since, we have admitted a new cohort at sixth grade level. And these girls have, grown with the school. Every single grade is represented by girls from across Afghanistan. We have girls who come to us and meet girls from other parts of Afghanistan for the very first time in their lives, mm-hmm. Often being the first person in their families to have that experience. For the past 5 years, we've also sent a group of our students for a winter program, winter being our equivalent of summer break. So we've taken advantage of it by designing a short study abroad program, and we have typically taken our students to India for an educational trip, often for a month. And in most cases, these girls have been the first people in their families to travel outside of Afghanistan. And when they have gone back to their villages, to their homes, they've had people from their villages come to their house asking them what it was like to travel, mm-hmm. what was their, experience like, what it was like to be in India, what it was like to fly, for instance. And it is one example of the power of the boarding school model in a place like Afghanistan, where these girls quickly go from being seen in their villages as, in not in all cases, but in some cases, as potential young brides, or should be that way, to young girls who could bring resources, knowledge, and skills back to their villages. And that has been very powerful.
Do you mind if I ask, I mean, perhaps I already know the answer, but how profound is your concern that those gains could be lost, especially for girls who come from those rural areas we're talking about? I mean, you just a few days ago wrote in the Washington Post about two of your students who were back home in a rural part of Afghanistan in mid-July and received a particular message from their grandmother. Can you tell us about that?
This was the most recent holiday they had. It was the Eid holiday in the beginning of July. And the girls went home. And this was at a time when more and more districts were quickly falling to the control of Taliban. The two girls that I talked about in the article I published at Washington Post, when they went home, their grandmother gave them a scythe and asked them that if or when the Taliban walk in to their house, these girls were instructed to take their own lives and waste no time doing that. And partly because around that time, the fear across Afghanistan was that Taliban were instructing people who had daughters between the ages of 15 and over to marry them to their soldiers. And this is an example of how people were reacting to that decree, if you will. But then the break was over, and the girls were expected to return to Sola in early August. And their grandmother gave these girls burqa. Mind you, these are sixth grade girls, really young, and put them on a bus to send them to Kabul. And when these girls arrived on campus, they bowed down and kissed the ground at Sola, expressing their gratitude for arriving at their school.
You know, Shabana, we only have about, 4 minutes left with you. And I just have two last questions. The first is, you heard me introduce this hour by saying we're just trying to find a new way to make sense of the past 20 years. It's a huge question, but let me ask you, this is your life. How do you make sense of your life between the ages of, 11 and 31?
If you had asked me this question a few months ago, I may have been able to articulate something. But right now, it's too fresh, looking at it from the perspective of everything that has recently happened. I'm really shocked. I still, look at all of this as a bad dream. But what I will say is, I know we don't have much time, is that, and without romanticizing about the resilience of people in Afghanistan, is that people in Afghanistan want the kind of freedoms that you want. They want the kind of opportunities for their children that you want. There is so much in common that I see between an Afghan parent and an American parent. These are things that are quite universal. And I want people to remember that. I want you to look at Afghanistan closely. I want you to think about the bravery of Afghan women who are pouring into the streets of our cities, demanding their rights, but demanding their Islamic right to participate in the public space, to participate in the political life, in the economic life, to have access to education. And these are the brave women of Afghanistan who are continuing to be. And mind you, it is Afghan women, not men, who are pouring into the streets of Afghanistan. And I see, as of today, that they have started to inspire men to follow their lead. Again, there is nothing to romanticize about the bravery or resilience of Afghan people. There are a lot of us who wish not to be resilient and to simply live our lives. But to say things like Afghanistan is a tribal country, it has never experienced unity, it never will, it's extremely damaging. Mm. For one, in the past 40 years of war, young Afghans have not lived under tribal structures. Afghanistan is an incredibly young country. More than 70% of the population is 25 or younger. Mm. And I will end by saying this, Meghna. You asked me earlier how I felt when I was burning the records of my students. That fire has transferred into every inch of my body. And I'm not alone in fueling that fire to continue to fight for girls and women and people of Afghanistan.
Shabana Bazij Rasikh, founder of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan, the first and only private boarding school for Afghan girls. She's in Rwanda now. Shabana, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, Meghna.
We also spoke with other Afghan women, including Fanus Basir, a 25-year-old civil engineer and former member of the Afghan National Women's Soccer Team. Her story is on our website, onpointradio.org, and wherever you get the On Point podcast. Definitely listen. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.